Hello, everybody, and welcome into another episode of the Comics Experience Make Comics podcast, the show where we talk about the nuts and bolts of making comics. But before that, Andy, I was curious to get a quick C2E2 recap. I know that there was pizza. I have not heard how the pizza went. I assume there was also maybe a convention in comics. But mostly, let's talk about the pizza.
Right. So, yeah, so there was this show. And we did a bunch of panels. We actually did we broke the Breaking Into Comics panel into, which is normally when I do a panel on Breaking Into Comics, it's, yeah, we're usually given the like 50-minute time slot, like your typical panel time slot. But in talking with them in the months ahead, you know, I was sort of talking about the way that the landscape has changed and that there's just a lot more to Breaking Into Comics than there used to be, and people are doing different things, and there's a lot more interest in creator-owned comics and sort of indie, going the indie route. And so we actually took the Breaking Into Comics topic and broke it to two 90-minute sort of classroom-style lectures, which is to say it's more conversational. It's less of a moderator with a couple of guests, and you get some insights, but you get some kind of funny stories. And this was much more like info driven. And you know, I did a bunch of research for it to make sure that I wasn't lying to people. But they were great. And I was really nervous for a couple of reasons. One is I thought 90 minutes was a lot to ask of people to give up, plus twice. Now I did break them into topics so that they were sort of self-contained. If you only went to one or the other, you know, it's not like you were completely confused or anything. But it was really, really cool. I mean, they were super well attended. The other reason I was nervous is because the first one was at the same slot as Marvel's Breaking Into Comics panel. So I kind of thought,
interesting programming.
I kind of thought like, oh, well, no one will be here. But it was packed.
Nice.
It was packed. And I talked with the Marvel guys too, and they said attendance at their panel was good as well. So apparently there are people interested in Breaking Into Comics in all sorts of ways. So it was a really good panel. We talked about what I call sort of the new comics career path. And I went really deep into that and what that entails and how can you become the master of your own destiny in comics and all that sort of stuff. So it was really good, and it was really well. I had people coming up, finding me on the floor. I didn't have a table at the show, but people would find me on the floor the rest of the weekend and were asking about me. But that all said, I mean, for sure, the highlight was Giordano's Pizza, which I'm just going to plug right here. If you're going to Chicago, get some Giordano's Pizza. A whole bunch of Comics Experience people that were attending the show, and I went out to Giordano's and gorged ourselves on delicious deep dish pizza, and it was yummy. And the next day, we all felt very heavy.
I knew that was going to be the big capper to the trip, or the highlight. Which you know, it is hard to not go out there and eat all the pizza you can. I think we should do an episode on planning for cons and pacing, because that is typically the thing that I think, where it's like, oh, it's only 11 p.m. where I live. My body's okay.
Right.
I should eat an entire pizza, because I do that all the time.
Well, fortunately, it was cold enough in Chicago that the next day I drove home after the show ended in the evening, because my kids both had soccer games, and I'm the coach of one of the teams, and I didn't want to miss that if I could avoid it. So I deadheaded home that night, but it was cold enough that I could put a little leftover pizza just in the trunk of my car, and it would stay cold all day, so that I got to eat some cold pizza on the way home, and that made the trip home a lot more enjoyable, but also a little bit more sleepy. For safety reasons, I don't recommend that.
Well, I think this episode now is going to have to shift entirely to pizza talk, because we could certainly at least get a splinter podcast going. Maybe we should talk about comics and making comics. I'm glad C2E2 was a good time. I'm sorry to have missed it, as I always enjoy that show in Chicago. Maybe next year, shoulder shrug. Kids and work. So we have a question that came to us over Twitter from at Josh Barbeau. And Josh asks, in comics, could it be beneficial, as a writer, for example, to have an agent? And then he goes on to say the pros and cons of having an agent. I have no experience working with an agent in the comics capacity. I've worked with agencies and independent agents in the video capacity, but never for writing or art or anything related to comics. I'm sure with the Marvel end of things and then in your IDW and creator-owned stuff, you've had to encounter that. And I know that you work with agents in terms of some of your comic stuff with people taking a look at them for other mediums.
Right. Yeah. So the thing to sort of be careful about is just to make sure that we're talking about the same thing. You know, when somebody says agent, for a writer, they can mean an agent like a Hollywood agent in LA, or they can mean a literary agent, and those are two very different things. And then in Hollywood, you have agents and managers, which are different but similar. And then there are agencies. So there's a lot of different sort of terminologies, and often lawyers or attorneys act as agents. Like your lawyer who will do your contract will come in and sort of negotiate on your behalf in the way that an agent might.
Interesting.
So given all the various ways you can have people getting involved, what I will say is that, and I'll also put this caveat on here, I have not been an editor for a large publisher since I left IDW in 2011. But what I will say is this: prior to that, working at IDW for 3 years and working at Marvel for five or six, whatever it was, prior to that, I had no experiences with agents where the agent was helpful in getting the work. So I was never contacted by for writers. Let me specify for writers. So I was never contacted by a writer's agent or manager, and then and like sold on wanting to work with them. There are a couple of reasons for that. One is if you've got a Hollywood agent or manager, they're probably not going to be like trying to get you comic book writing work as opposed to getting you film or TV writing work, because they make money on commission, and you know, getting 30 cents on your commission or $5,000 on your commission might sway their opinion of where they would want to push you know, versus a comic script versus a TV script. So there's just the money differential in those two worlds is big enough that most Hollywood folks just aren't that interested in the comics work. And a lot of comics creators who work in TV and film have carved it out with their managers and agents where there's not even a commission, because they don't want the hassle of it.
Right.
So you're not very often, I mean, sometimes you're contacted by an agent, like it can happen, but the agent doesn't sell the writer. If I'm contacted by an agent and it's, you know, if I've heard of the author and I'm aware of their work and like their work, well, then there's a conversation to be had, but that's because I'm already aware of the author. But more often than not, it's I've contacted a writer, or you know, I've linked up with a writer somehow, and we got to the point where we want to do a project together, and then it's time for a contract negotiation or something like that, and then it's, well, let me introduce you to my agent. But even then, often, you know, the project has a set budget and I can't budge the budget. So I can talk to an agent and be like, this is the budget, and they can say, well, what about this? What about that? And I can essentially go, well, this is the budget, because I don't have the ability to move it. So that has happened. In my experience, when lawyers and agents for writers have gotten involved with me as a project manager, it has slowed the process down. And more often, I shouldn't say more often because I don't actually have numbers on this, but often wound up costing that writer the work. Now, that writer may be okay with that because I wasn't able to get high enough to where they would want the work in terms of payment. I don't know. I don't usually have the follow-up conversation, but I've certainly had it where you know, I thought we were good to go, and I've had writers start on work and then an agent, usually this has happened with attorneys that get involved, and they get lost in the weeds and pedantic and sort of demanding outrageous things, and then it's just like, well, I can't give you a piece of Spider-Man, sorry. and then the thing falls apart. Like, I mean, I say that jokingly, but I've had attorneys ask for like stuff similar to that, you know, not that, but you know, I had an attorney ask for, I can't remember what this was. It was Spider-Man or Avengers or something like that. And the attorney said that that they wanted a piece of anything with those creators, like going for, or with those characters going forward. And I was just like, well, there's like, no, because no. And then because Marvel owns them and they're just not going to do that. But also no, because I don't even know how you track that. Like, yeah. Like, the resources you would have to spend to track that it would be outrageous. So, you know, you get these sort of things where you're just like, logistically, that's like, I'm not even sure that's possible. So I have had that happen where the agents have come in, and which is not to say that they aren't doing their job properly or whatever. Like I said, when that's happened, it's entirely possible that that agent or that lawyer has gone back to the creator and said, we're not getting what we're asking for. I think you should say no. And then the writer agrees to saying no. And then it, you know, it's falling apart. But I've also had it too, where, you know, I'm getting no traction with the agent or the lawyer. And eventually I've just had to email or call and say, and I would tell the agent that I'm doing this. I'm not trying to go behind anybody's back. Like, I'm just going to go and say, like, this is where we are. And I've had projects that, because they're on the schedule and the negotiations are taking too long, I've had to cut loose of a writer because I just couldn't get there fast enough in order to get the project out the door. So there are all these sorts of things that come in. And so my experience as an editor was that. Now, as a writer, my experiences have been different. So I have a manager in LA, and she is awesome, and she has helped tremendously. She's helped get me work in lots of areas, video games, as well as, you know, TV, film, consulting sort of things. And she's great. And she understands sort of my attitude towards this stuff, which is, I enjoy it. I'm happy to do it. I'd like to be compensated fairly for it. I'm not looking for the moon. I want to enjoy what I do for a living, and I want to get, you know, paid for it. And she gets it. She understands me and my approach to these things. And so she's great. And I have worked with different agents, and I've worked with some agencies. But when it comes to comics work, she doesn't really get involved, because it's not, you know, like I was saying, the money difference is there. And also, to be fair, like I know the comics field quite well, so I can negotiate my own comic stuff because I have a really good understanding of what's realistic. So now with artists, it's a little different, because a lot of times artists will hook up with agents who will sort of package teams together, or, you know, they'll send out like PDFs, or you know, they'll go to conventions and show off the portfolios of all the people that they represent. And I have used some of those agencies. I have also stopped using some of those agencies when I have found out how little money in one or two cases actually made it to the artist. And just sort of on an ethics, you know, basis, I've stopped using one or two of those agencies. But most of the ones that I've worked with, where I've been able to find out kind of what's going on, have been reputable and fair. So they've been a little bit more helpful in my experience as somebody on the project management side, you know, the editor side. Those have been a little bit more helpful, because I'll get one PDF and I'll have 15 artists in it, and I'll be like, oh, this guy's got potential. Let me check out what his rates are and that sort of thing. So those types of things have been, I think, more beneficial for artists in the comics field. If you're a big writer already and you've got an agent, that's fine. You're probably still going to wind up getting your own work. Joey and I were talking beforehand, and I mentioned Neil Gaiman. Like, his agent, who's very nice, I like her quite a bit, she doesn't really have to go out and get Neil Gaiman comics writing work. If Gaiman wants to write a comic, he calls the publisher and says, "I want to write that comic. Go talk to my agent." Right? I mean, I don't think there's a comics publisher in the world that wouldn't be like, "Oh, okay, Mr. Gaiman, you can write whatever you'd like." So that's kind of how it works. So pros are, a good agent that actually knows the comics market can give you realistic expectations and can help you navigate, I think, some of the things in contracts, give you some good advice on what to look for in a contract, make sure the person you're doing business with is sort of dealing in good faith. So there are a lot of pros. I feel like I came out strong on the negative side here, but there are a lot of pros if you have an agent that really does understand the market. Most agents don't understand the comics market because there aren't a lot of comics agents. Their focus is in the literary world, their focus is in TV or film or something else. There are some, and actually Ava, my manager, actually knows quite a bit about the comics business, but that's because she grew up a comic book fan and sort of studied it. And when she was getting into TV and film, she worked with a lot of comics creators. So she gets it. It's not impossible to find somebody like that, but I don't think it's all that common. And now I feel like I'm just tripping over my own words, which is perfect.
Well, let's kind of reset to maybe something that would be beneficial to folks listening. And this is kind of what I've gone through when I've had offers from publishers, is the first step I've gone through is to have, in terms of reaching out to people that aren't friends in the industry, is reaching out to a lawyer to have them redline it. And that was the first time I'd had to do that in this kind of particular contract, which was, hugely beneficial to get some feedback, to just have that kind of reaction. And from a cost standpoint, it's not the same as having somebody rewrite you a contract in terms of starting to work with legal counsel. So if you don't have an agent, you don't have a lawyer, is that something that you feel like, oh, that could be a first step? Look at somebody that's been in and around the industry and has time to give you some feedback and say, here are the danger signs. Here, this sounds good. This isn't standard. Here's what you could ask for.
Yeah, I think so. I think it tends to be kind of more important with the smaller publishers, if you're offered a publishing contract, because a lot of times the smaller publishers don't, their contracts are still kind of being hammered out. A place like Marvel or DC, not that they have a standard contract per se, they probably have a baseline, but they know that they should offer, royalties above a certain threshold, and that they they have sort of, they're sort of creating the standard. Which isn't to say that they don't need feedback and don't adjust their contracts. They do, as the industry changes and as they get feedback from creators and fans and all that sort of stuff. So the contracts are always, to one degree or another, evolving. With a smaller publisher, sometimes these publishers crop up and it's just a couple of people that want to make comics. They may not have a lawyer among them, and they may not have a lot of money, and what money they do have, they realize that if they're going to publish comics, most of that money is going to go into printing and shipping and marketing comics.
Right.
And so a lot of times you wind up with contracts that were sort of put together by people with best of intentions, but don't know how to write good legal language or don't know what industry standards are for contracts. So it is good to have somebody knowledgeable, whether that's an attorney or somebody else, to be able to go over those and go, here are some of the things that you need to look for. You need to look for what's the definition of in print for them? Is there a reversion clause for the rights to go back to you? What's included in the marketing costs, if they're going to recoup their costs before a profit split, or however it might work. There are certain things that you should look for, especially when it comes into like entertainment rights and that sort of stuff. There's a lot of stuff to look for, and there's a lot of ways that people can be kind of tricky or underhanded about it. I don't want to say that that's normal. And I always find if I get offered a contract and I feel like there's something where they're trying to get around me, you know, or trying to kind of do something, then that makes me just not want to work with them at all.
Right.
You know, I mean, I may go back and see how they react to my comments, but it doesn't put a warm fuzzy, you know, if I feel like something's kind of underhanded. So, but having somebody that knows their way around contracts, that knows their way and knows their way around the industry, because the comics industry does not have, on the whole, a great reputation amongst the literary world. And that has to do with a lot of the copyright and work for hire agreements and stuff like that. That's not always industry standard all over the world and in all parts of publishing. So understanding how that works on the broader, you know, giant publishing umbrella of which comics is a part of, is helpful too. You know, and as I have advanced in my career, I don't really feel like giving up copyright. Now, don't get me wrong. I still do a lot of stuff where I don't own the copyright. I still do a lot of work that's with you know, named characters and brands and stuff like that. And I usually do that because it's fun, honestly, more than anything else. And I've been doing a lot of children's stories the last couple of years, which are super fun for me because those books come out and I can read them with my kids. My kids are a good age for that.
Right.
My older one's starting to age out a little bit from it, but I think I've got one or two more that'll come out and he'll still like. you know, so those are projects that are fun to do. Yeah, I do get paid, and I'm grateful to get paid for work. Whenever I get paid for work, I'm always happy for that. But the bulk of doing that is because, you know, I enjoy those characters, and it's something I get to share with my kids, and that goes a long way with me.
Nice.
When it comes to stuff that I'm creating for myself, I don't really want to give that up.
Sure.
I don't really want to do that. I see no reason to do that. But like I said, you know, if this were me 15 years ago and I was trying to break into comics, that equation was very different back then. I was aware of the copyright laws. I was aware of what work for hire was. I was aware that if I was on staff at most places, certainly if I was when I was interviewing for the job as an assistant editor at Marvel, I was aware that I wasn't going to have any ownership stake. I wasn't going to have any royalties in anything that I worked on. So I did go in, you know, unlike some of the stories that people have heard about, you know, Jack Kirby or Neil Adams or certainly creators that even came before them, Simon and Schuster, you know, unlike those creators, I knew the deal 100%. I knew the deal going in. So by the time I walked through the doors at Marvel, I'd already made peace with the fact that I wasn't going to own a chunk of anything. I wasn't going to get a royalty check. I was fine with that. And that was worth it because I got to work on these characters, that I loved. And I got to work on stuff that I was hoping I would be able to work on stuff that would help propel my career further so that if I did enough good work, I could pay that off on future projects where I would have the ability to own my own work or participate in it more. So yeah. There you go. There's a big long story.
In conclusion, agents.
There's a big long story here.
I think that's a good in-depth kind of back and forth, and hopefully that answers your question, Josh. If you have a question you'd like to hear on the show, please tweet at Comic Experience, or you can email info@comicsexperience.com, and we will talk about it here on the show. Andy, we got through C2E2, pizza and all. I know you've got different stuff coming up personally. I know CE has got a bunch of stuff hopping right now. I don't know if you want to run through and kind of give folks a highlight of where they can find you and what's going on online.
Yeah. Well, actually, this weekend, which is May 12th, 13th, and 14th, I will be at Comicpalooza in Houston, Texas. I'm doing 5 panels on comics writing, comics art, breaking into comics, how to budget a comics project. You know, if you're at the show, come to the panels. I will actually have a table, and I'm assuming it's an artist alley. So I'll be swing on by, you know, say hi, ask some questions, let's chat. So I'll have a table there. So that's pretty fun. I haven't been to a convention in Texas in a number of years, so I'm looking forward to seeing some Comics Experience people that are out there too, that I know are coming. Yeah, and right now on our workshop, just the other week, we had a sort of what we call a town hall meeting where we all get together online and talked about we're kind of overhauling the publishing program, and submissions from workshop members and from students are opening up June 1st. And we're going to be reviewing that material and all that good stuff. So that's getting some renewed interest, and we're going to be adding more live workshops. We do at least one a month already, and we're going to be adding more of those. If you're interested in those live workshops, they are pretty in depth, and they're it's really good, strong content. We actually have one tomorrow night on writing panel descriptions, and then we've got some of our more recent ones are archived and they're accessible to members. The recordings are on things like how to use double page spreads, finding the tone of your tomorrow's finding the tone of your project, inspiration versus structure, how to deal with action scenes from writers and artists' point of view. There are lots of these things, and they're nuts and bolts, and they're helpful for a lot of folks. We always have our Ask the Pros threads with writers, artists, colorists, letterers, editors, even a retailer on there to ask questions about what retailers like, which is pretty cool. And of course, there's the critiques that we always have from your peers and professionals. So it's a pretty happening place right now. There's a lot of energy, which is great. And then we've got courses coming up. Intro to Writing starts at the end of this month, May 24th. Advanced Comics Writing, which we haven't listed in a long time, starts August 30th, but you have to take Intro to Writing first. It's prerequisite. We've got the Live Studio Experience Advanced Art class starting on May 24th as well. Digital Painting, July 13th. Intro to Color and Advanced Comics Coloring are September and then October. And again, there's a prerequisite. And Intro to Comic Book Art is open for enrollment starting in September 6th. And the crazy thing is we are actually already getting people enrolling for these classes that are out as far as September and October.
Oh, nice. Well, that's good to hear.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. It's just weird because now I look at that and go like, do we need to add another? Like we're all tired. No, it really is. It's great. I mean, it's great for Comics Experience, but I feel bad because as these classes approach, you know, and it's not like something in September is going to sell out next week, but
right.
As we get closer to that, you know, it very likely, I would say at this point, will sell out in advance of the class. And, you know, I always feel bad when I get those emails like I wanted to take this. So here's my heads up to everybody who listens to the podcast. If you're planning on taking, especially when an intro course, you might want to sign up sooner rather than later.
Take it now, go sign up, and you can thank Andy later when you're eating pizza that he gave you that tip. All right. I think we have covered everything, and it sounds like there is a lot in the hopper at the old Comics Experience. Until next time, keep making comics.